You are Locked On Hawks, your daily Atlanta Hawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello, friends, and welcome to episode 509 of the Locked On Hawks podcast. I am your host, Brad Rowland. It is Sunday evening. As you listen to this, it's probably Monday. And welcome back to the podcast if you have joined us before. And if you have not, then welcome to the podcast for the first time. A very, very busy show this week, today, because of the fact that I was traveling over the weekend. Actually still on the road right now, so if my quality is not quite where it normally is, my apologies for that. I will be flying home on Monday, so I'll be home and back in my normal studio on Monday evening for our next podcast. But for now, our task is to talk about two basketball games that took place over the weekend, one of which was a big-time win for the Hawks on Friday, and then the other was a 19-point loss that was a lot closer than that, I will say, on Sunday afternoon at the hands of the Milwaukee Bucks. So plenty to get to on the pod. It'll probably be a little bit longer than normal for a solo show, but I'll try to move things along as we go here. There were two things that I wanted to touch on very briefly before we get to the two games, and that was a couple of trade reports slash, you know, rumors slash buzz, whatever, however you want to say it. One of which came from Sean Devaney of the Sporting News at the end of last week. No real specifics here, but actually was referencing the fact that Jeremy Lin is available in trade. That's nothing new there, obviously, because of the fact that Lin has been, he's an expiring contract, he's an effective player, and as a result, playoff-bound teams or teams that are looking to be playoff-bound we'll be interested in him, to be sure. Three teams specifically that he referenced, and that's why I wanted to pass it along to you. That was the Portland Trailblazers, the New Orleans Pelicans, and the Philadelphia 76ers as potentially having interest in Jeremy Lin. No specifics in terms of what would be coming back the Hawks' way. I have some ideas, but just in general, you know, the Blazers could use an upgrade behind the combination of CJ McCollum and Damian Lillard. Lin's better than Nick Stauskas, because he's better than Seth Curry, who's their two backup guards. Obviously, Curry's a pretty solid player, but Lin is better than those guys, and obviously that's kind of why you would want him to be added to the roster if you're Portland. In New Orleans, they want to play Jrue Holiday off the ball, and in my opinion, Jeremy Lin is better than Elfrid Payton and a lot of the other guys that are available in New Orleans' backcourt. So they just need talent in general. He'd be a good fit there. And in Philly, it's sort of weird in that he's an upgrade on TJ McConnell pretty clearly as backup point guard. It's tough to match salary for Philly without including Markelle Fultz, which makes it tough to talk all the way through that because Markelle Fultz is another issue altogether. With that said, the Sixers would clearly want Lin, and just he'd be able to play with Ben Simmons as well because of the fact that he's a pretty decent-sized player, can shoot it, and defend point guard, so he'd be a pretty good fit in Philadelphia. That's kind of the reasoning behind that. Nothing specific on that. At least wanted to pass that around. And in general, there'll be a lot more on Lin over the next 4 weeks or so when it comes to trade stuff, so we'll talk more about that in the future. One more thing I wanted to hit on is that Kevin O'Connor of The Ringer referenced on a podcast on Friday that Taurean Prince is apparently available in trade. A few people asked me about that. I did not hear it until after the fact, but shouts to Reggie on Twitter for pointing this out to me for the first time. I didn't want to write about it necessarily because it was a podcast. It was sort of a free-flowing conversation, but it's worth noting that O'Connor did sort of report-ish, that the Sixers, Blazers, and Thunder have interest in Taurean Prince. I'm not 100% sure how serious all of that is. It's not a huge surprise to me because Prince is an interesting asset. He's on a rookie contract. He's still relatively young, and he can shoot it, obviously, as an offensive player. I think, you know, in team-wise, Philly could obviously, as we just said, use another player on the wing. He's got good size. There was the notion on the podcast that they could offer Zaire Smith and a 2021 pick. That'd be a lot for Prince. That'd actually be a pretty good return for the Hawks. Portland, you could just use another wing. And then Oklahoma City doesn't really have too much to trade, but they obviously could use another wing that could shoot in the way that Prince does. I haven't heard that much internally, or I guess, you know, off the record stuff. I usually want to pass that along carefully. I haven't heard too much about Prince being available, to be honest with you. I think it does not surprise me if you use your common sense, and I've referenced that in the past, that Prince might be available because of the fact that Travis Schlenk didn't draft Taurean Prince. Obviously, he's been out for a little while here. He came back on Sunday. We'll talk more about that later. But Prince is someone who could be available. I'm not 100% sure what the front office thinks of Taurean Prince. I think he's an interesting asset because of the fact that he is young, he's cheap, and his offensive game is pretty interesting. But I'm not surprised at all that Hawks will be taking calls on Prince. I have not heard anything about them actually, you know, actively marketing him. And, you know, it's still early, and I wouldn't necessarily hear about that. But, you know, I often hear things that, you know, you kind of let it pass through your brain. I've not heard anything about Prince being, you know, actively shopped. So that's something that I always wanted to keep in mind there. But there was a little bit of rumor stuff there There is 4 weeks to go. It wouldn't surprise me to hear another rumor or two on Torian Prince. If I had to guess right now, I would guess he's not traded between now and February. If you go into the summer, it might be a little bit more likely. But, you know, still 4 weeks to go. A lot of trade stuff to talk about in the near future. I wanted to pass those two things along before we get started on the podcast. So, to the games themselves. The big one and the more exciting one if you're a Hawks fan, I think, was Friday night. The Hawks getting a 123-121 victory over the Sixers on the road. It is definitely worth noting here at the top that Joel Embiid did not play in this game. He's the best player on the Sixers. He's probably a top 15 player in the league, top 10 player in the league. He's very, very good at basketball. That lessens it just a little bit. I will say it's still an impressive win. Even without Embiid, the Sixers were favored by about 9 points. That's still a playoff-level team, especially in the Eastern Conference without Embiid. And to go on the road there and win is very impressive from Atlanta. There was some pregame mystery about J.J. Redick as well. He actually did play. Embiid was not ruled out until very, very late. In fact, the Hawks were 15.5-point underdogs at one point on Thursday before the game tipped off. So there was a big line movement. It closed around 9.5-10, somewhere in there. So obviously, that's, you know, Embiid's very important, but still, the Hawks played very well in the game. Really, from the opening tip, they did a lot of things well, to be honest with you. You know, 8 seconds into the game, the Hawks turned it over, and Ben Simmons scored, which wasn't great. Simmons was actually jumping center, which is kind of funny. You know, Mike Muscala, old friend, was the starting center for Philly in this game, but it was a lot of mix and match stuff from the Sixers. Pretty tough defensive matchup for Trae Young that I wanted to point out because of the fact that they don't really have a traditional point guard. I mean, they have McConnell, who played 34 minutes, actually ended up playing a lot in this game. But coming into the game, I'm not sure I would have expected that. And they had to start the game with Young on J.J. Redick. And that's a really tough matchup for anybody, much less Trae Young running around screens, etc. And as a result, he struggled a little bit defensively in this game. But kind of a rough spot. I wanted to point that out at the outset. Justin Anderson was actually the first wing off the bench for the Hawks after not playing at all in the previous game against Brooklyn. He didn't play that much. He played 11 minutes. He had 3 fouls. But that was an interesting thing that I at least wanted to point out, that he was the first wing off the bench and was the only one of the Anderson-Hamilton-Dorsey trio that played real minutes in this game. You know, 7 turnovers in the first 9 minutes for the Hawks. Honestly, it's kind of a miracle they won this game. They committed 21 turnovers on the road and still won. That's pretty jarring. And the turnovers were sort of punctuated in a few different key areas. A lot of those were early on. There were 2 each in the first quarter from Jeremy Lin and Trae Young. The shooting was good for Atlanta in the first half. They had 9 points from Collins. Sorry, the first quarter. 9 points from Collins. 8 from Lin. But, 17 combined from Jimmy Butler and Ben Simmons. Those guys were really good in the entire game. And that's not really anything to be surprised about. Those guys are very good. A 10-0 run by Philly to open second quarter. And at that point, I kind of assumed the game was going to flip in their direction. That was really the first run of the whole game by either team. The first quarter was pretty back and forth. Other than that, Atlanta, though, did return and have a 10-0 run of themselves later on in the period, which is very nice. Actually, it was right after that. It was, I think it was almost immediate. By the way, Mike Muscala, who had 11 points in the first 8 minutes, sort of an old welcome there for Mike Muscala, who had a nice game, at least shooting the ball in this spot. Philly then had a 6-0 run later that became an 8-0 run. That was worth noting as well. But a lot of good shooting from the Hawks big men in the first half. Dwayne Dedmon and John Collins combined to make all 4 of their threes, and they had 23 points in the first half. 12 turnovers, which is not ideal because defensively they were okay-ish, but the second quarter was not great, and they did force turnovers, et cetera, and that was sort of the recipe for them holding and only down 2 at the half, which is obviously a big win at that point in time. Pretty back and forth in the third, despite the Hawks using a 9-0 run to take a 6-point lead with 6 minutes left in the period. In general, it was a pretty positive quarter. The Hawks scored 35 points. They were up by 1 at the end of the third quarter. There was a nice no-look alley-oop pass from Bembry to Collins. It was sort of a highlight that I wanted to point out. Alex Len caught Jimmy Butler with an elbow in the face on a post move. Jimmy was not very happy about that. It was pretty clear. There was a long review. Len actually got a flagrant 1. That was not the ejection. The flagrant 2 is the ejection 1. Flagrant 1 was just the normal flagrant foul. Butler was okay physically. He actually stayed in the game, so no problem at all there. But that was sort of an interesting time because Jimmy was definitely not very happy about that. Philly tied it late in the third. But in general, the Hawks played well and shot the ball well for 3 quarters. They had 17 turnovers, which again too much, but that was kind of the end of that. Atlanta pushed to a 6-point lead early. It's sort of evaporated in a hurry, though, after back-to-back jumpers from Redick to tie the game with 7 minutes to go. And from there, it was basically all back and forth. It was the Kevin Huerter experience for a lot of the stretch run. There was a 7-0 run by Philly to sort of take control a little bit after the Hawks went up by 5 on a Huerter 3. Huerter actually lost Redick on a 3. That was a big shot, at least in the moment. From there, though, you know, Philly got an alley-oop out of a timeout that went to Jimmy Butler to take a lead. From there, though, it was, Huerter and Collins had back-to-back buckets to get the Hawks to lead. Muscala tied the game with 3 minutes to go on a 3. That was a big shot for him. But fast-forwarding a little bit, Jimmy Butler went off the glass with 1:16 to go to go up by three. At that point in time, the Hawks looked to be in some trouble, but that Herter hit a very, very deep shot to tie the game with 53 seconds to go. That was a huge shot from Kevin Herter. Then Butler got doubled up by the Hawks, turned the ball over with 25 seconds to go in a tie game, and then John Collins hit the what eventually became the game winner. A fadeaway jumper over Muscala. A tough shot from Collins, honestly. Probably not the most high percentage shot in the world, but he made it. It was obviously a great look from him. 9 seconds to go. The Hawks did counter defensively. They brought in Anderson off the bench for the final defensive trip. They fouled Butler, which is not what you want, obviously, up by two, but it's better than an easy basket, I should say. He missed the first, which was a huge miss, obviously, and then he tried to miss the second and did. And then actually, Wilson Chandler kind of missed a bunny. The Hawks got really lucky to escape with the non-overtime portion there, but it didn't fall, and I'm not sure how it didn't fall, but the Hawks escaped with the win. That was pretty impressive in a lot of ways. So I can go a lot deeper on that probably, but because we have two games to cover, I won't do that now. But one thing to note, in addition to Kevin Herter's brilliance, we'll talk about that in a second, was that Jeremy Lin actually closed this game. He played the last 6 minutes, 25 seconds, which was kind of surprising in some ways. And yeah, it's one of those things where, you know, Trae Young played 32 minutes. That was a lot. I was surprised he never came back in. Still, it's, kind of interesting that he didn't play more, to be honest with you. Lin was kind of short before that, only played 21 minutes in the whole game, 15 minutes before the stretch run. So I think it was kind of just an interesting rotational thing where it was time for Lin to play, but I was surprised they never came back to Young. Not a huge deal, but people definitely noticed that, asked me about it. I thought Lin was just okay in this game. It wasn't like he was spectacular and Young was decent, but that's sort of the way cookie crumbled, and no real issue with that because of the fact that Young did play a lot. It wasn't like he didn't play big minutes in the game. He played star level minutes at 32, but you know, Lin did what he did there, and it didn't really make a huge difference, but something to point out to be sure. Otherwise, obviously the headliner was Herter. The Hawks shot as a team 68% from the floor in the fourth quarter, which is huge. 3-4 from three, and that doesn't happen every day on the road against a good team. They scored 34 points. Herter had 14 in the fourth on 5-7 shooting and played all 12 minutes. He was the biggest part of the win for Atlanta down the stretch. He had a big game, obviously, with 29 points, a career high. So we'll talk more about him in a minute. I thought it was kind of a couple of times when it was noticeable that Herter was kind of looking for his jump shot, both off the ball and on the ball. I thought he was good in general, obviously, with the career high in points, but a lot of excitement, kind of rightly so, about that. But just as something to point out, he struggled a little bit on Monday, on Sunday, I should say, at times. And before that, in the three previous games, he was 13 of 40 from the floor. So you're going to have highs and lows with rookies. That's kind of how that always works. But he was awesome on Friday, and that's worth pointing out. He was definitely the headliner. Also, one more thing before we get into the individual stuff a little bit. Is that Dwayne Dedmon had a career high in assists with 7. He was really good as well, and there is that. One more thing, I guess we'll talk about the individual stuff now. It's interesting because I have two games to talk about. The bench was kind of a weird spot here. There were only two guys that really played prominent roles off the bench. That was Jeremy Lin and Alex Lim. Lin played 21 minutes. That led the entire bench. This is definitely a starters heavy game for the Hawks on the road. 9 points, 3 turnovers for Lin, 3 assists, 2-4 from the floor, 5-5 from the free throw line, so fairly efficient. Again, not spectacular, but he was fine and did his job. He was minus 11, but that wasn't really on him. I thought Lin was just fine in this game. And then other than that, Alex Lin, 9 points, 6 rebounds, and 4 turnovers, which is obviously a bad thing for a center. 2 block shots, didn't play a ton, 13 minutes. He would have been a lot more useful if they had Joel Embiid. There's not really a good matchup for him. When Embiid's not playing, Muscala is much more of a perimeter player. That kind of defeats the purpose of having Lin on the floor a ton in this game. And obviously, Dedmon's really good. So that's kind of why you don't see more of Alex Lin. Otherwise, Vince Carter, 13 minutes off the bench. Didn't score. Actually had 4 rebounds and an assist. But Carter, I thought, was just okay. It's not been a great stretch for Vince. We'll talk more about that when we discuss the game on Sunday. But Carter was just kind of out there for the most part. Spellman played 3 minutes off the bench. And Mark Spellman, scoreless, 1 block, 1 rebound. He was pretty much not prominently involved in the game. Daniel Hamilton played about 20 seconds. He came in for 1 possession defensively in the first quarter. And then Tyler Dorsey did not play at all in the game. Anderson was the only other guy that played 11 minutes. Didn't score, minus 11. 2 turnovers, a block shot, an assist, and 3 rebounds. Only took 1 shot. You know, he's definitely sort of a defensive first replacement for the Hawks right now, and didn't play a ton there. To the starters, we'll sort of end with Kevin Herter. So we'll start with John Collins, who's the other big bright spot in this game. 25-9 for Collins, a pretty ho-hum effort, which is kind of what it says about Collins. He's been really, really good. Obviously, the game winner is a headliner in a lot of ways. 10 of 17 from the floor, 1 of 1 from 3, 4 of 6 from the free throw line, 6 offensive rebounds, 9 rebounds in total, 2 assists, a steal, only 1 turnover. He's plus 8. He was really good. Not really much to say about that other than the fact that he was really good in this game. And obviously, you know, the game winner is the game winner. That stands out in a big way, but he was just very good across the board. DeAndre Bembry, 14 points, 6 rebounds, 5 assists, and a steal. It was definitely a positive Bembry game in a lot of ways. I mentioned before, I think last week, there was a couple of games where it was kind of the full Bembry experience offensively and defensively, where he was really good defensively, really bad offensively. In this game on Friday, though, I will point out on this, we're talking about Friday still, 14 points, 6 rebounds, 5 assists, and a pretty efficient game, only one turnover. It was largely positive from DeAndre in 41 minutes to lead the entire Hawks team. His defense is very valuable, and obviously without Prince and Bazemore in this game on Friday, he's a very, very prominent member of the team, and he played well, I thought, in a general sense. Trae Young, a quiet 18. I wasn't like he was bad. But a relatively quiet 18 points, 5-12 from the floor, 3-8 from 3 is positive, 5-5 from the free throw line, 4 rebounds, 5 assists, 2 steals, only 4 turnovers, which is still probably a little bit too many, but not egregious. He was minus 1, and I thought Trae was pretty solid. Nothing fantastic, but given the fact that this is kind of a tough matchup for him in a lot of ways, he competed defensively for the most part. They were definitely hunting him a little bit. I think part of that is why he didn't play during the stretch run, is that Philly was pretty actively going after him. Lynn is not the greatest defender in the world, but he's certainly a lot better than Young and a lot bigger than Young defensively, which it makes it a little bit tougher to pick on him in the way that they probably would have picked on Young down the stretch. Dwayne Devin, I mentioned before, was really good in this game. 19 points, 8 rebounds, 7 assists, a career high, 1 steal, 1 turnover, and it was plus 10 in 33 minutes. Shot the ball great, 3 of 5 from 3, 7 of 11 from the floor. It was a really good Devin game in a lot of ways, outplaying the Phillies' big men, whether it be Muscala, whether it be Jonah Bolden or whoever in the front court. Devin was a lot better than those guys were, and that was a big part of why the Hawks won this game. And finally, Kevin Huerter, who was obviously great, 29 points. 11 of 17 from the floor, 5 of 8 from 3, 3 rebounds, 3 assists, and 2 steals for Kevin. He was very active as a shooter, sort of hunting his own shot. That's what you want to see from Kevin Huerter in a lot of ways. Being aggressive, that's something Lloyd Pierce has been talking about. He referenced that as sort of a coming out party for Kevin Huerter, and it was pretty obvious what he was looking to do in this game, and he definitely was able to pull it off. So, shouts to Kevin Huerter. He played very well. After this short break, we will come back, talk more about the game on Sunday, but just as a general rule here, the offense was great. The defense was not so great on Friday, but the Hawks going on the road and picking up a win against Philly is really, really impressive. And we'll come back after this short break to talk about the next game on the agenda. All right, we're back to talk about the Hawks-Bucks game from Sunday afternoon. This is a very interesting one in a lot of ways. The Hawks, it was not quite as successful on the court for Atlanta, but still a pretty interesting game to chronicle. As you probably noticed by the beginning of this podcast, when I said I was out of town, I was not in the building for this one on Sunday afternoon as I normally would be. It's one of the rare games. I'll probably only miss like 2 a year, maybe 3 a year at home, and this is one of those games. But I got to catch this one live on the broadcast, and also a good friend of the program, Rashad Milligan of Peachtree Hoops, was in the building, so I had some nice inside info there. A lot to chronicle about this game, but the final score was 133-114 in favor of Milwaukee, and that was not a huge surprise in the end, but there's plenty of scoring lines to monitor. So we'll go from the top here. Torian Prince returned in this game. That was sort of the headliner. Aside from Coach Bud's return to Atlanta, that was kind of the big picture headliner before the game, was that Bud came back. There was a nice tribute for him. From what I understand, it was a pretty warm reaction from the fan base, which is probably what I would like to see. Bud is the most successful head coach in Hawks history in terms of having the best team, at least in Atlanta Hawks history. He captained the best team that the Hawks have ever had, the 61 club. He was generally very successful. Obviously, the end wasn't just super pretty, but it's one of those things that wasn't like a full-blown disaster either. He got a better job, went and took it. He's coaching Giannis. He's having a lot of success, so we can't really fault him too much on that. And that was nice to see some warm reaction for Budenholzer. But aside from that, Prince came back. There was a 12-minute restriction on him, according to Lloyd Pierce. And I think he played exactly 12 minutes in this game, maybe a little bit, maybe a shade underneath that. That's kind of the way that they operate around there. We'll talk more about him later. But that was sort of nice to see, obviously, that kind of guy coming back. I have some reservations about the way that the Hawks have been playing without him versus the way they will play with him, or the way they played without him in the past. But still, Prince getting back just adds more talent to the Hawks, to be honest with you. And I never want to see a guy be injured by any means. So good to see Prince back on the court. The other big thing here was that Dwayne Devin missed this game. I thought before the game, I mentioned this, and I think it was still true after the game, is that Alex Poitras would have been very helpful in this spot. I'm not really sure why they wouldn't have brought him back as insurance from Erie, but it's not the biggest deal in the world. I think much of that for one previous game, I think last week when they had an absence. I think Poitras would have been very helpful against this particular opponent in Milwaukee. But again, not a huge big picture thing. I just wanted to point that out as a small thing. And Amari Spellman got the start. That was kind of a surprise in the moment. I wasn't stunned by it. I actually like pseudo predicted it on Twitter. It's one of those things where I think I was expecting him to play significant minutes because of the fact that Alex Len, it's a bad matchup for him in a lot of ways. The start was kind of surprising, though. First time he started since November 19th. He's been out of the rotation for more than a month after the injury. We'll talk more about him later. He gives some pretty interesting quotes to Chris Fivermore of the AJC after the game, but we'll talk about that later. again, I understand it though. And Spellman had actually had a nice pretty start to this game and really played well overall. Had a couple of threes early on, made his first three threes, and gave honestly a lot of positive contributions. So that move worked out, I would say, for Lloyd Pierce, and a pretty prescient one there without Dedmon. The loss of Dedmon was felt though. It's a pretty bad matchup with or without Dedmon, but he's pretty much the only big man on the Hawks roster right now. You know, aside from Collins, of course. That's as mobile, and with his shooting offensively, you know, Spellman has a little bit of that as well. Dedmon's just a little bit longer, a little bit springier around the rim, etc. But you know, Spellman played well. That was a good move from Pierce. It was a good offensive start, honestly, for Atlanta in this game. They scored 10 points in the first 2 minutes after scoring 14 in the whole first quarter in Milwaukee. They scored 32 points in the first quarter of this game, and honestly, the offense was not the problem for most of the night. We'll point out some times where that sort of waxed and waned, but it wasn't like it was a disaster aside from turnovers. Turnovers were the big theme here. They had 24 turnovers in the game that led to 36 points. That was the highest number all season long. The Hawks had the 36 points off turnovers. That was not the turnover record, but the direct leading to turnover number was the highest of the season for the Hawks, and that puts you in a huge hole against a team that's just better than you anyway, even in your home building. The Hawks also played a lot of Jeremy Lin and Trae Young together. 12 minutes together is the season high for those two guys. They've been averaging about 2.8 per game for the season. Granted, it's been up a little bit more recently, but still, they played those guys a lot together. It wasn't like it was unsuccessful, just something that I wanted to point out. As a general rule, that they kind of went to that in place of other wings. The Hawks only played 9 guys for the competitive portion of this game. They went to Dorsey and Anderson for the final minutes, about 3 minutes or so. But before that, they played 9 guys, and instead of going to 4 wings, they went to Lin sort of as the fourth wing. I was okay with that decision. I guess the team in Milwaukee that doesn't play huge all the time in the backcourt, like they start pretty small. With Brogdon and Bledsoe, you know, Bledsoe is a pretty big point guard, and Brogdon would be a huge point guard as kind of a pretty small shooting guard. But George Hill played a lot for them. It wasn't like they were overmatched physically in the backcourt, but I want to at least point that out before we get going too far. They played a lot of Lin Young in this game, and I was actually okay with that. Prince came in with about 5 minutes to go in the first quarter. He really had a rough start to his stint. I think his first stint was kind of rough, especially defensively. There were some noticeable lapses. I don't want to kill the guy. It's his first game in 5 weeks. My thoughts on him have been pretty documented, but defensively, it was kind of an adventure. There was a nice moment or two in the second stint that he played, but the first one was kind of rough, and that kind of led to a lot of stuff going wrong for the Hawks in a little bit in the first quarter. It was a 9-2 run by the Bucks. Took their first lead fairly early on. Then they actually won the quarter 35-32, but Atlanta. This was sort of microcosm for the whole game. But the Hawks really crashed the glass in a lot of ways. Offensively, especially, they had their season-high rebounds allowed offensive rebounds allowed by the Bucks, 18. That's a lot of offensive rebounds. The offensive rebound, 37% of their own misses. That's a ton. A lot of that was Alex Len in the first quarter. He had five offensive rebounds in the first quarter for one player. Is kind of jarringly impressive. I will say, though, the Bucks shot 75% from the floor in the first quarter, which is really bad, obviously. 4-6 from three. They had 5 turnovers, but the Bucks had a 141 offensive rating. That continued for most of the night. They were really good offensively in the spot. There was a nice second jump, I thought, that I made a note of for John Collins. It's sometimes just worth pointing out how athletic he is around the rim, just the fact that he can get off the floor as fast as anybody can with the second jump ability. He beat Brooke Lopez up to the glass and then dunked all over him. As a result of that, Collins is just sort of a freakish athlete around the rim, and that comes in a lot of handy. There was a absolutely filthy left-handed touch pass from Kevin Herter that was definitely highlight-worthy. It was compared to Nikola Jokic at times. It was an awesome punch out pass from Herter to Prince for a three that forced the Bucks timeout. That was sort of the play of the day for me. It was an awesome pass by Kevin Herter. But still, you know, kind of a downturn late in the first half. A 10-4 run to end the half from Milwaukee, and from there the Hawks never led again. But still, you know, offensively the Hawks were okay in the first half, except for the turnovers. It was they were sort of buoyed, and they were allowed to be in the game only down 9 in terms of at the half because they were so good on the offensive glass. And Milwaukee, by the way, entered this game number 1 in the NBA in defensive rebound percentage and lowest in the NBA in terms of, I guess, best in the NBA in terms of allowing second chance points. So the Hawks, you know, kudos to them. That was the one thing they did well in this game on the offensive side of the floor, was just crash the glass and actually made a big thing. But the Hawks made 14 turnovers in the first half, didn't shoot it all that well, and that's sort of the difference when it coming to put together the final margin. There was a nice off-dribble three from Trae Young early in the third quarter to get the game back within 6. The Hawks got it to 4 at one point. Young, by the way, had a career high in rebounds with 10, and he had a career high with about 5 minutes left in the third quarter. It was a pretty impressive rebounding performance from Trae Young, and that was sort of continuing the theme around the entire Hawks. Young had three on the offensive glass himself. Given his stature, that was kind of surprising. His previous career high was 7 against Detroit in the game that I was actually at, up in Detroit on December 23rd. But yeah, career high there for Trae, so shouts to him for that. There was a quick 5-0 run from the Bucks to force a timeout. It got up to 10 in a hurry. Len got his fifth foul in his first 12 minutes of action. He fouled out later. That was rough from him in a little bit of ways. John Collins rolled his left. That was the same ankle, by the way, the left ankle that he actually was held out for most of the start of the season. He rolled that ankle late in the third quarter. It took him to the locker room. He was officially diagnosed with a left ankle sprain, according to the broadcast, and according to the Hawks making an official announcement. He returned, though, after they retaped it. We'll talk more about that later on, but I was surprised he came back in a little bit of ways. I probably wouldn't have done that, to be honest with you, but we'll talk about that more later. A very efficient 22 points through three quarters from Trae Young. That was nice to see. Also in the fourth, Vince hit a three. By the way, Vince Carter hit a three early in the fourth. That's probably his biggest contribution of the night, honestly. And the Hawks got it to 8, sort of threatened from that point forward, but it was an 11-3 run right on cue from Milwaukee to sort of put it away, put them up by 16. They brought Collins back when they were down 14 with 9 to go. I probably would not have done that. You know, Pierce, pretty candidly, after the game in his press conference, I think Chris Kirchner asked, kind of why they did that, and Collins and Pierce basically just said because they told that he was available and everything was okay, which is understandable. I will say, though, if there was anything weird at all with Collins' ankle, and maybe there wasn't, but they did announce that he had a left ankle sprain, down 14 with 9 to go, with the way that he plays and the future and sort of the calculus here when you're playing a game that, you know, you're not competing for the playoffs, Milwaukee's up 14, they're probably not going to lose this game, and the way that Collins plays so hard all the time, which is a credit to him, by the way, I probably would not have brought him back in if there was any doubt at all. Maybe there wasn't, and that's something we just don't know. They're not going to really tell you that, and Pierce was pretty, you know, matter of fact in saying that they said, you know, he's available to play, he can play, and he put him back in. I get all that. I will say, if there's any doubt at all, I wouldn't have played him, but I do understand why you put him in there, because if he's available, he's available. I get all that. So just something to keep in mind. I probably would not have done that, but understandable. From there, the lead got to about 21 with 3 minutes to go. You know, it actually briefly got down to about 13. Giannis came back in. That was kind of the end of that. It was at 21. It was over from there, and it settled at 19 at the final margin. So I tweeted this out after the game, but the Hawks had a 37% offensive rebound rate, which is astronomically high, and they lost by 19 points at home. This is the first time in the entire league this season that a team posted that high of an offensive rebound rate, 36% or higher, and lost by more than 17 points. So basically, the Hawks were great on the offensive glass, and they really weren't good at anything else offensively in the game. You just don't see that kind of rate happen, and just to drive the point home, first time in the whole league this season that someone was that good on offensive glass and lost by this big of a margin. So the Hawks just weren't very good at anything else, and that is definitely worth pointing out. We'll come back and talk more about this later, but there's some interesting quotes after the game circulating about Amari Spellman. We'll, in fact, I'm just gonna start there. We'll go into the individual stuff now, but quickly before we get to that, defensively the Hawks struggled in this game. Milwaukee's been the best offensive team in the league this year. They had a 120 offensive rating. Not a huge surprise. You know, Giannis was awesome with 33 points. Bledsoe had 24 and 10. 53% from the floor for Milwaukee in the game. 121 offensive rating is awesome. And, you know, Atlanta's defense isn't really capable of slowing them down, which I understand. So that's worth pointing out. Offensively, though, just the offensive glass and everything else was kind of ho-hum. There were a couple of individual players that played well, but the offense in general kind of sputtered after the first quarter, which isn't a terrible shock, but worth pointing out. So we'll go to the individual stuff now. I'm going to leave with Amari Spellman. Number one, because of the fact that he came back and played a lot, you know, season high minutes, but a high in a long time for Amari Spellman. With 30, he had 13 points, 6 rebounds, 4 block shots, and an assist. He was 4 of 9 from the floor, 4 of 7 from 3, 1 of 2 from the free throw line. Lloyd Pierce said candidly, and I thought correctly, that he thought this is the best game of Spellman's career. I totally agree with that. I think he was really good in this game, and that's worth pointing out. I've not been the highest on Spellman, but I will always say, and I tweeted this out during the game as well, it's easy to see what the Hawks see in him offensively. He is someone who's comfortable with the ball in his hands. He can play make a little bit. He's a pretty good passer. He can stretch the floor a little bit. You could sort of see that package materializing as a rotational piece in the league on the offensive end of the floor. And he sort of showed that whole package here with some good facilitation stuff, good rebounding, good block shots around the rim. That's not his strength right now, but he was, you know, something that he can at least bring to the table. Sort of, and I almost feel bad about this, but sort of the headliner, though, because of probably the result and the fact that he said what he said, was that he talked to the AJC and Chris Livermore after the game, and kudos to Chris for getting this out of Amari, but he asked him about sort of what happened in the G League and why he was there for so long, et cetera, and I'm going to read the full quote to you right now that Spellman gave to to the agency about the about his the agency determined as his sporadic play. So here's the quote from Spellman via the AJC, and I quote: "Pretty much, I was fat. I had to lose weight. That's what allowed me to get back. That's why I've been working as hard as I have, and that's why I haven't been playing, just to get me back right. Coming down and losing the weight that I have lost, and being able to compete at the level that I have been able off the court, helped me go out and compete tonight." End quote. So it's definitely noteworthy to hear a player in the NBA say that he was fat. Point blank, like, I try to avoid that, especially that word and sort of that characterization. I've sort of noted throughout the season and even over the summer, et cetera, that Spellman needs to work on his body. That's sort of just out there. It's not something that I'm, you know, it's not fun to talk about, but hearing an NBA player say that, number one, it's admirable to me that Spellman would say that and be as candid as he is. That's kind of a window into why everybody likes Amari Spellman. Everybody seems to like Amari. He's a really competitive, fiery guy, but sort of speaks his mind, et cetera. And, you know, from what he said, that's kind of just out there. I will say, though, within the story from Viv Lemora of the AJC, which I definitely would encourage you to go and read the entire thing for full quotes from Spellman and Collins and Young and Pierce about Spellman, et cetera, et cetera. In that piece, though, Viv Lemora notes that Spellman said his weight got to as much as 293 pounds. And Spellman is 6'9". He's short. He's not a wing player, et cetera. He's a big man. But still, 293 is a jarring amount. With that said, and again, kudos to Spellman. He's lost 22 pounds since then. He's now at 271, and there is more work to be done there, obviously. I will say, though, he's listed at 245 officially by the league. I've always thought that seemed a little bit light, but to say that, for him to say out loud that 293 was the number, he's listed at 245, so that's obviously not really instructive. But losing 22 pounds is admirable, but 293 is a jarring number to see on someone who isn't a 7-footer. Like, Spellman's not really a prototypical center length, so, you know, he's going to have to get in better shape still. I think it was kind of noticeable if you watch, and by the way, Jeff Siegel wrote about Spellman's play in the G League. Even then, I think if you watch Spellman today in the game against the Bucks, even on TV, and I'm sure it's even more jarring up close, it's clear that he's lost some weight since he was in Erie. And you know, obviously, he said he lost 22 pounds, so that makes a lot of sense. So he's on the right track here. And there was a lot of talk about him being a professional in the piece from the AJC, and even on the TV interview that Spellman did with the good folks at Fox Sports Southeast, he was talking about being a professional and kind of what that means and all that fun stuff and sort of getting his head on straight, etc. And as a lot of good stuff being said by Amari. But still, 293 is a jarring number, and I have to point that out again. That's just a lot for someone. And it's not like Spellman's ever been someone that you would confuse with John Collins in terms of their build, but he's going to have to keep losing weight. He's going to have to keep getting in better shape and getting more trim. But you can see that even today, he moved better than he was before. And I think it's something that you have to keep an eye on. I've been saying that since the summer, but he's going to have to get quicker. He's going to have to get, you know, more explosive. And part of that's weight. It's not all that, but some of it's just being an NBA player and being in NBA condition. But the injury is something that is worth pointing out again here. You know, I'm sure he would not have ballooned to the number that he referenced in this space if he had not had a hip injury. You can't really train much with a hip in terms of cardio and keeping weight off. So I'm sure that is some of it. But Spellman's going to have to keep getting weight down. And that was an interesting takeaway from the game. So back to the play on the floor. It's sort of a long non sequitur there, but I thought Spellman played very well. And I think it's important that I credit him with that, because I've been pretty hard on him at times, and it was hard on the draft pick. He played very well in this game. And again, I totally agree with Pierce that it was the best game of his career. Hopefully more to come from Amari. Elsewhere in the starting lineup in this game, DeAndre Bembry had a nice offensive game in some ways, and some ways not. A very typical Bembry game in some ways. 18 points and 7 rebounds is awesome. Not terribly efficient, but reasonably efficient. But 6 turnovers, no assists for Bembry. Coming into the game, and it's something I want to point out now, I've been really high on Bembry for a long time, but coming into the game, he had a 49% true shooting, which is very bad for a wing, and he had more turnovers than assists. And then he had 6 turnovers and no assists in this game. So when I reference him struggling on the offensive end, it's not all about raw numbers. He's just not efficient right now, and the turnovers are a real problem. Defensively, he brings a ton of value, and I think that's always important to point out, but I got a lot of pushback for still saying today that Prince is a better prospect. I think it's pretty clear. Honestly, Prince is a much better prospect than Bembry, but just something to keep in mind and point out here. I thought he was okay, especially defensively in this spot, but the turnovers are a problem, and that was the one rough spot here for DeAndre. Kevin Huerter took a step back, obviously, after his monster game on Friday. That was to be expected. He's a rookie. It's what happens. 11 points, 3-9 from the floor, 2-5 from 3, 3-4 from the free throw line. Did have that awesome pass, 3 assists, 2 rebounds, a steal, and a block shot. It wasn't like he was terrible in this game by any means. He was fine, but nothing necessarily to write home about. John Collins was not as efficient as he normally is. 13 points on 17 shots. That's kind of a circle game for him. An 0-4 from 3 hurts. Not a huge surprise there. He's going to have that happen to him every once in a while. But 13-11, still double-double, 4 assists. He was okay. He had 5 fouls. It wasn't a great Collins game by any means, but he was not someone who took a ton off the table for Atlanta. And then lastly, Trae Young, 26 points, 10 rebounds, 4 assists, 4 turnovers. I think he probably should have had 8 or 9 assists. There was a couple of missed shots that were bad from the Hawks in this game, but I thought Trae was pretty good. It wasn't like he was quite as electric as a passer as he almost always is, but got to the line 13 times. That's very encouraging. Made 11 of the 13, 7 of 16 from the floor. So he was a pretty efficient 26 points. That's what you want to see from Trae Young for sure. Rebounding is a nice bonus. I'm not sure you can count on that, to be honest with you, but I thought Trae played well in this game. On the bench, not too much to talk about. I talked about Prince before. I thought he had some highs and some lows, but it's 11 minutes. There's not too much to talk about there, but it was good to see him on the floor and healthy. Vince Carter was tough to play in this spot, and he played 12 minutes. I think he would have played less than that if not for the Collins injury. He played 5 in the first half. It's just a rough matchup for him. He can't really guard Giannis, and it's kind of tough for Vince. Alex Len fouled out in 17 minutes. He was very active when he did play, 12 points and 8 rebounds. I thought he would get a pretty decent job on Giannis, which is kind of a weird thing to say defensively, but I thought Len played pretty well, just too many fouls. Jeremy Lin struggled in this game, 7 points. Did have 5 assists against 3 turnovers, which is the best rate of anybody on the team, honestly, in a game when they turn the ball over a ton. And as a team, by the way, 24 turnovers, 19 assists. Woof, that's bad. But Lin, 2 of 10 from the floor, 0 of 4 from 3, 3 of 4 from the free throw line, minus 20, the worst on the team. He wasn't the worst player on the team. He was not that, I will say that, but it wasn't the greatest night of Jeremy Lin's life. He did play a lot, though, because of the fact that they played the two point guards together quite a bit, but it wasn't a great night for Jeremy. And then the rest of the bench was just Dorsey and Anderson played 3 minutes each. No Hamilton in this game, and Devin, of course, missed the game. So, all that to say, the Hawks didn't play well offensively at all in this game. They played great in the first quarter, and that was basically it for the offense. The rest of the game, they really struggled. But defensively, highs and lows. The 19-point loss against Milwaukee is not something to be crazy pessimistic about. The Bucks are really good, no question about that. They might be the best team in the league. They have the best numbers in the league of any team right now. I'm not sure they're going to win the title or anything, but they'll be a legitimate contender throughout. So losing them by a lopsided margin is not anything crazy. And by the way, it was closer than this. It was probably like a 10 or 12 point, real, quote unquote, real outcome loss. It was definitely a sizable loss, but not 19. I think that was kind of misleading, but. Anyway, that's a lot of information that I've thrown at you over a short period of time. This will be one of the longest solo pods I've ever done, so hopefully you guys made it to the end of this thing, and I know I packed in a lot of information. I'm planning to do a couple of more expansive podcasts this week. The Hawks have a very light schedule ahead. They play Tuesday, and then they really only have 2 games this whole week. It's kind of a crazy schedule after, Lloyd Pierce and others have kind of, not complained, but kind of noted how rough the schedule's been. This is a very light week for the Hawks, so I'll have some time to sort of fill in the gaps on some big picture analytical stuff, have some guests, et cetera, et cetera. So wanted to cram in a lot here. We'll come back with some guests later on in the week. But at the very least, the Hawks play again on Tuesday evening at home against the Thunder. I'll be in the building for that one. That's Dennis Schroeder's return to town, so that'll be fun to watch. And if nothing else, we'll have plenty of content, so please stay tuned. Please subscribe to the podcast. Please tell your friends. Do all of that fun stuff. We will see you guys later on in the week.